We hear so much about the great outdoors, but what is it about the outdoors that makes it so great? Could there be something, perhaps a divine healing component to being outdoors that is, well, maybe so near and available to us that we fail to recognize it as such? And if raising healthy kids is important to us, and I think most of us would agree that it is, could spending proper time in the wild or anywhere outdoors be as important to a healthy parenting paradigm as other options such as nutrition or exercise, discipline, or even formal education? Understanding the role of God's great outdoors in raising well-rounded kids, today on Licensed to Parent. Well, hello and welcome to today's edition of Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy in Martin, Georgia, just north of Atlanta. Shepherd's Hill is a year-long Christ-centered residential program for teens in crisis. Now, each week we try to bring you the lessons that are learned inside the gates of Shepherd's Hill, and we try to bring them outside so that you can be the proactive parent that God designed you to be and avoid needing a residential program for your teen. And Trace, we are in the perfect setting today to talk about the benefits of spending time in the wild or even just outside in the garden here at Licensed to Parent, because as you've mentioned before, our studio is located right next to one of the horse pastures here at Shepherd's Hill. And and you certainly know from your experience here at Shepherd's Hill about the healing component for kids of just being outside and away from all the noise and the hustle and bustle of life.
No doubt, Rich. There's just something deeply spiritual that takes place when people are out in nature, especially when we sit and listen to God's creation and to that inner voice that seems to get drowned so often in the city or even in the suburbs. There's a reason we have Shepherd's Hill kids live in the woods for a full year. It's therapeutic. We know that God and his raw creation can change body and brain chemistry, oftentimes better than any drug that man can manufacture. But I think it's important to note that body and brain chemistry is really only the empirical indicators of what's going on first in a person's spirit, and that we really can't affect one without affecting the other. But of course, like, you know, many realities, we can never empirically prove this.
Right.
You know, all we have is the overwhelming evidence of a changed life. And much of that change comes from the fact that kids are living and gleaning things out there in nature, God's natural medication and therapeutic experience. And the kids themselves will tell you this, Rich. We hear it all the time. I know I've quoted her before, but I want to quote her again. Her name was Anne Frank, author of The Diary of a Young Girl. And she said this: "The best remedy for those who are afraid, lonely, or unhappy is to go outside somewhere where they can be quiet, alone with the heavens, nature, and God. Because only then does one feel that all is as it should be and that God wishes to see people happy amidst the simple beauty of nature. I firmly believe that nature brings solace in all troubles."
Yeah.
And Rich, those insightful comments were written by a kid, and long before television, much less the mind-numbing and spiritually stunting techno devices that our kids live with and live for virtually 24 hours a day, every day, today.
Right. Well, you know, I think that today's guest would concur with those comments from Anne Frank. Our guest today is John Hunt. John spent 30-plus years as a manufacturer's rep in the hardware, paint sundries, and security industries before retiring in 2010 to write his book entitled Walking with Jason. This is the story of his son, Jason, who was a wilderness educator prior to his death in 2001 from a vacation rock climbing accident. John, by the way, is currently executive director of the Jason William Hunt Foundation. Its mission: to provide scholarships to therapeutic wilderness expeditions so that kids can learn to believe in themselves. And we'll ask him more about that in just a little bit. John is a graduate of Stonehill College in Massachusetts with a degree in economics, and he and his wife, Rosemarie, have been married for the past 42 years. That, as we often say, is the real reason we have them on this program.
That's right.
And John and his wife have two daughters and three grandchildren, and they live in the suburbs of Cincinnati, Ohio, where, in keeping with today's program, we may hear his neighbor's lawnmower passing by. Anyway, John, so glad to have you with us on the program today. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome, John.
Thank you for having me. This is a pleasure.
Well, John, your book, Walking with Jason, is a tremendous tribute to your son, Jason. Tell us a little bit about the book, your son, Jason, and why you decided to write it.
Well, let's start with my son, Jason. He had some issues growing up as a in his teens and found that he got into rock climbing senior year of high school. And rock climbing and being outdoors placed some demands on him, so he had to really kind of straighten up and clean up a little bit. And in that process, he also found out that he liked the outdoors, and he liked rock climbing. Mm-hmm. To the point where he really felt a need to be outdoors a lot. And in that process, in going to college, he started looking around as to what he could do. And my wife is retired as a special ed teacher with an emphasis on behavioral problems. And so he kind of took my love of the outdoors, and he took her love of teaching and working with young kids, and turned it into this wilderness educator, as I call them, who go out in the woods on these expeditions with kids who have some risks, have some needs, mm-hmm. and helps them to guide them to turn their lives around or to find a way. Actually, it's internal to themselves of believing in themselves and doing the good things. So after he died, we started the foundation as a way of providing some scholarships for kids to continue in these programs. And we decided that the foundation needed a better cash stream flow than what we had. So I decided to retire and write the book and maybe promote the foundation, promote the wilderness, and to provide some extra benefits for kids. And that's basically where we've been for the last couple of years now.
Well, I think you've done a tremendous job with it. I think that people like me who were directors of programs like this, I know I gleaned a great deal from your book. I think parents in general would glean a great deal as well. Down to the centuries, John, getting out in nature has always had a therapeutic element to it. What exactly is so therapeutic about it?
You know, you say we've been looking at the wilderness for centuries. I'd like to take you back to a quote in the Bible. And let me just set it up this way, if I can. Children that have needs, children that are in trouble, children that are at risk, oftentimes in response to the traumatic issues that face them, turn inward. They get quiet. Mm-hmm. They get hard, as we call it. Their hearts harden. Right. Their whole life is one of protection. They're trying to defend themselves so it doesn't happen to them again. Mm-hmm. And in the process, they get this very quiet, very foreboding type of personality that leads to all sorts of other manifestations. But what I'm leading to is that in the fact that they harden their lives, they harden their hearts, there's a quote from Deuteronomy that has just blown me away ever since I got into the wilderness and have been trying to work on this. But in it, it talks about how God turns oil from shaley rock and honey from stone. Now, oil and honey in the Bible are very important issues. And they're very important products. They're the basis of a lot of life and commerce and a lot of issues in the Bible. But when you stop and think about that point, that there's that alchemy, if you will, of turning something so valuable out of what is rock. And that's what happens in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. Kids with these hardened hearts, kids with these destroyed, if you will, lives, kids with these just fear and just this anxiety and trauma and all of this abuse piled on them. And all of a sudden they go out into the woods and they have a chance to be exposed not just to the nature of itself, the oak tree and the rivers and the animals, which are sounds and sights that they've probably never seen before, but also internally they get a chance to think about themselves. And in that process of thinking about themselves and existing in the outdoors, which is new to them and a challenge to them, they turn. Those hardened hearts actually start to soften mm-hmm. up. And they become the child, and they become the person they can be. And it starts a new direction for them. It starts a new life.
Well, in the book, you mentioned nature deficit disorder. Can you describe that and why parents should be concerned about this?
The concept is the fact that in our lives, we've become so home-based. A good quote from the book is, a child said that he didn't like going outdoors because there weren't any electrical outlets. He couldn't plug any of his game toys and his computers and all that stuff in to protect their children. Seem to have withdrawn kids from going outdoors. They want to keep them under in the house. They want to keep them under their watch,
which is virtually just as dangerous.
Oh, very much the same thing. Because now you've created people who are not developing the social skills.
Mm.
And they also are breaking down. You're not giving them the chance to be creative.
Right.
Because in going into the woods, you're game playing. And they play with the rocks. They play with the water. They play with the wood. They make forts. They climb trees. Or they run to the top of a hill and run back down again. And in all that playing, they are being creative. They're learning the creative skills that they really need to possess for later
it's
life.
It's actually changing the brain chemistry. It's affecting it.
Oh,
it's building.
I've read that, and I got to believe it's true. I just watched my 2.5-year-old grandson the other day spent 3 hours in a sandbox all by himself. It was just incredible. He got up that morning, had his trucks in his arms, went out onto the porch. It was raining. He came back in, then he stood by the door to wait for the rain to stop. But he went back out as soon as it stopped, and he got in that sandbox. Now, he's only 2.5, but think about that curiosity he had. Think about that desire to do something on his own.
Sure.
And that's what the wilderness helps you develop again, or helps you to recover.
I think this may be a marketing issue. We just need to tell our kids that the real 3D gaming is outside.
Oh, I agree with you. I like that concept, too.
John, you know, as parents, we always want to look for the teachable moments in life. What are some of the lessons that we might miss if we stay inside?
Wow, good question. Where do we start? Let's talk about the first lesson is a child has to be aware of his surroundings. Child has to be comfortable in those surroundings. And if you've never been in those surroundings or you've never have any chance to be there, you really don't understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And another concept is I think there's a continuum of life. There are children who don't understand where leaves come from. I was in Virginia researching the book, and one of the field instructors said to me, we had a child out here the other day. We were walking through all these leaves, and he said, where do these leaves come from? He had no concept of the leaves falling from the tree and the rebirth of trees.
Wow.
You know, the spring, fall, the change of the seasons, none of that meant anything. He didn't know where these trees came from because in reality, where he lived, there probably weren't that many trees, right. And no one took him outdoors to watch the trees or explain it to him to begin with. So there's many different facets of a child's life that is hindered by the fact that they don't get outdoors.
Right.
You know, scientists, I get a kick out of it. Scientists talk about all this big research they do and they go out into the woods or they square off areas if they're archaeologists, and they're doing their digs and they're scraping in the sand and they're digging carefully, or other scientists go into the woods to check on birds or whatever it might be. And to me, it's like they're just playing on a different level. They've taken their playing skills.
That's right.
And they've produced a lifestyle out of it. They've produced a career. But really, a lot of your work in the future, research, things like that, it's a process of playing. It's a process of being creative.
Sure.
Our guest today is John Hunt. John is the author of the book Walking with Jason, the story of his son Jason Hunt, who was a wilderness educator prior to his death in 2001 from a rock climbing accident. John is also the executive director of the Jason William Hunt Foundation, with a mission of providing scholarships to therapeutic wilderness expeditions so that kids can learn to believe in themselves. We've got to take a quick break here on the Licensed to Parent program. And John, when we come back, I want you to tell us a little bit about the wilderness expeditions that your foundation has in mind and some of the benefits kids can get from that. This is Licensed to Parent. We'll be right back.
Teen rebellion, depression, addiction, rage, cutting, and suicide are destroying our families today. But there is a way out. Shepherd's Hill Academy offers a 12-month, Christ-centered, nonprofit residential program where kids are being transformed with a biblical worldview and often medication-free. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias is just one of many Christian leaders who understands what's happening at Shepherd's Hill Academy.
It really is such an honor to come alongside Shepherd's Hill Ministries and License to Parent to rescue those who have been seduced along the way. I cannot gainsay how important this is, and to get behind a ministry like this, one will find the rewards to be extremely powerful in changing society.
Get the help you need at Shepherd's Hill Academy. Go to helpmytroubledteen.org. helpmytroubledteen.org. It's difficult to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you're face to face with a teenager who argues with you at every turn. Maybe you and your teen can't talk to one another about anything without it getting complicated. For nearly two decades, Shepherd's Hill Academy has been bringing healing to teens and families from around the world. Up until now, that help has come through its residential treatment facility in North Georgia. But now, your family can benefit from that experience at home through Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching, designed to help you discern God's will for your family, build good communication skills, deal with defiant children, and more. Our family coaching team will work with you by phone, in your home, at work, even while you're on the road, to help your family develop a game plan to succeed. Sign up for Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching today by visiting licensedtoparent.org. Live the family life your family was designed for. Click on the family coaching banner at licensedtoparent.org. Welcome back. This is Licensed to Parent with our host, Trace Embry, the founder and executive director of Shepherd's Hill Academy. I'm Rich Rosel, and our guest today is John Hunt, author of the book Walking with Jason. And John is also the executive director of the Jason William Hunt Foundation, whose mission is to provide scholarships to therapeutic wilderness expeditions so that kids can learn to believe in themselves. And John, I want to find out more about the foundation and the scholarships and things like that, but let's put a definition in place here. What is a wilderness expedition?
What we're talking about is a group of young lads, girls or boys, coming together and going out on a backpacking trip with experienced field guides, or what I call wilderness educators, who are there to guide and to guard them. And the expedition will last 20 days, 49 days, 79 days, 77 days. It depends on the particular program that the children are attending. But the idea of the program is that you are taking them out of their normal, everyday element, and you're putting them into a group. It's a group they may not know the other members, so everybody's new to the group. And in that extended period of time where they're backpacking, there may be some canoeing or paddling or kayaking, they may do some rock climbing, there could be some maybe horseback riding, whatever the case may be. They may only be in a desert, or they may be up in New England in the mountains of New England type of thing. So the scenery can vary, the people they're with can vary, but the focus is that for that 20 days or that 70 days, they're a self-contained unit. Mm. And they have to get by. They got to put their tents up the proper way, because if it rains that night and the tent isn't set right, they may have rivers running through there, and they may be sitting up on top of their backpack as the water runs through their tent. If they don't collect the firewood in time, and it rains, they may not be able to get their meals cooked. They may end up with a cold dinner. So what the wilderness does is forcing them into the wilderness's natural consequences. You don't mess with Mother Nature.
Exactly.
If you don't do things the right way, Mother Nature can be cruel, and she'll get you.
And Mother Nature can teach us things that a counselor or a therapist or even a parent can't. Or
oh,
won't.
Sure. A parent can say, "Don't do that," and the child will run out and do it. And you know what? How many times you got to slap them along the side of the head before they realize that maybe they should? And I'm not saying you slap the child across the side of the head, but Mother Nature can do it.
Yeah, you can't mouth off to Mother Nature. There was an old butter commercial.
Yes,
Or was it margarine? Was it? I don't know which.
It was margarine.
Margarine.
Yeah, you can't fool Mother Nature.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think I actually read. I think I used that in the book. I'm old enough to remember that.
I'm right behind you, brother. Well, you said, now getting back to your book, you say that being in the woods reignites their senses. What do you mean by that?
I think the best way to explain that would be there's a gentleman I ran into. Actually, I ran into him on the Appalachian Trail. Guy by the name of Jerry Horton, he's down there in Georgia. He's a Christian youth minister. He's been doing it for, well, now it's about 33, 34 years, I guess. Mm-hmm. Jerry takes youth out on a weekend, a five-day trip, maybe even a shorter than that. But one of the things he does with them is, obviously, there's no cell phones and there's no Walkman or any other type of music devices. You know, all that electronic gear is left behind.
Mm-hmm.
But then somewhere after, in the middle of the first day out, Jerry will say to them, calls them all together, takes his watch and says, all right, I'm going to give you 60 seconds, and I just want you to stand here for 60 seconds or move around a little bit, but I want you to listen. And at the end of 60 seconds, I'm going to ask you, tell me what you heard. And so he waits 60 seconds and calls them back together and says, what'd you hear? And they kind of explain, everybody heard something different. And he says, okay, we're going to do it again. And he does it one more time. Same thing happens. Kids come back and they've heard different things. Then he says, okay, we're here for 5 days. Over the next 5 days, or 3 days, whatever that might be, over the length of our trip here, I want you to listen for more sounds. And I want you to tell me what you've heard. And, you know, over those days, kids start coming up, I heard this, I heard that. And they, what it does, because they finally have a chance to get away from the jangle of their everyday lives, their body gets more attuned to the setting of where they are.
Absolutely.
Partially, you know, the adrenaline probably kicks in, or the fear sense kicks in, because they don't know where they are. And they're a little bit scared about that. So all of a sudden, there's a heightened awareness. But then the more they're into the wilderness, and they realize the calming effect, or they realize it's really not so scary, they still begin to pick up on the weather, the changes, the scenery, and the sounds of what's going on. So all of their senses are picking up all this new data, and they're processing it not as a fear, but as something that's beneficial to them.
John, what counsel do you have for the parent who is just too busy? He knows it, but just can't seem to discipline him or herself to take time away from the rat race long enough to enjoy some quiet time with their kids.
Do whatever you can do to get some time to do it. It's just the fact that somewhere you've got to make a commitment. What's more important? Take a look at your life, make a list of things that you do, and decide what's more important and where should you really be.
Mm-hmm.
It's a personal inventory. It's a personal decision, but it's something that as parents, we have to continually be doing, because we're responsible for the lives of our children.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting quote. Thomas Merton, who was a Trappist monk, he came over from Europe, and he was actually going to be a Franciscan. And he was up at St. Bonaventure, and he's walking in the woods up there, and he's praying and et cetera. And he said, America, you have such a great, I'm going to paraphrase here, but it said, America, you've got such a great gift that you really don't understand. You've got all these mountains, and you've got all these rivers, and you've got these trails and these trees. He said, what a great place you have, these miles for contemplation. And probably parents need to do a little of that. Parents probably maybe need to do a little bit more of that than what they are doing.
Sure.
So I think maybe the first step a parent needs to do is get some quiet time in their own lives,
yeah,
so they can spend some quality time with their kids.
Absolutely. Put the kibosh on Six Flags or in Disney World. John, we're kind of running out of time here, but I wanted to touch on ropes courses a little bit. I don't know what you know about a ropes course, and can families find, first of all, what is a ropes course? Can families find a ropes course experience without having to spend a week at camp somewhere? And can just a single day be beneficial to bring parents and their kids back into talking terms?
Ropes courses are very effective in that group building or that team building. Mm-hmm. And I should know fairly well because my daughter, Danielle, who was a wilderness educator herself for 3 years, has spent a number of years down in Charleston, South Carolina, with their Park Recreation Commission, and has been running their high elements or their ropes courses. And she's recently moved to Phoenix, so that's changed. But the idea of the ropes courses is one where, again, you're getting them outdoors, right, or some of them are in warehouses, too, for that matter. But it's learning a skill. And it's learning to be in teamwork, because you normally, in a ropes course, you're always secured. You're always tied by way of ropes and pulleys back to somebody else who's on the ground. So while you may be 10, 15, 20 feet in the air, and while you may be walking the postman's plank or the Burma Bridge or whatever the particular element may be, you're still really connected to someone down on the ground who's got you in their control. So you, the perceived risk of being up in the air and walking across a wire is one thing compared to the actual risk, because you are connected. These programs are well designed and over-engineered, so you may be a 200-pound person, and that rope and those wires are designed to hold a ton or a half a ton, way, way, way beyond anything they would ever need to hold you up there.
Sure. We do need to close out. Our time has run out completely, but we've been talking today with our special guest, John Hunt, who's author of the book, Walking with Jason. He's also executive director of the Jason William Hunt Foundation, providing scholarships to therapeutic wilderness expeditions so that kids can learn to believe in themselves and, I would dare say, find God in the process. You can learn more about the foundation and you can learn more about the book at the foundation's website, jwhf.org. That's jwhf.org. And by the way, again, our purpose on this program is to try to get you as a parent to be proactive, to do the things that we're already doing in these residential and therapeutic programs so that your kids hopefully will not end up having to be there. And I would recommend John's book to you, Walking with Jason, as a great resource to find out the many benefits to living a large portion of your life in the wilderness, outdoors, and taking advantage of God's creation. John, thanks so much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure to have you on Licensed to Parent.
Thank you for having me, and all of you. Have a great day, and God bless.
Thank you.
God bless you, brother.
And this is Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a wilderness-based therapeutic program for teens in crisis located just north of Atlanta, Georgia. You can learn more at LicensedToParent.org. And while you're there, you can also listen to past programs, check out Trace's blog, and pay a visit to the new Licensed to Parent store, where you'll find some parenting resources we hope will help you to navigate the challenging waters of raising teens in today's culture. Again, that address is LicensedToParent.org. For Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rosl, inviting you back again next time so you can renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. See you next time.